Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
June 19th, 2007, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, aperture priority versus shutter priority. Welcome back to another digital story. I think today we're going to get back a little bit to camera technique. I've had the chance to meet with a lot of digital story members lately. I've been out and about, I've been at conferences and on the road, and it seems like everywhere I go these days, someone comes up to me and says, oh, are you taking a grab shot there? And I'll turn around, and sure enough, it'll be a digital story member wanting to talk a little bit about photography. And as a result, I have been getting some good suggestions for shows. And one of the suggestions was, hey, you know, I use program mode almost all the time. Program, you know, being the P right there on your mode selector on your camera. And of course, a lot of people say that that P stands for professional, but we know that it actually stands for program mode. And professionals use this mode all the time. In fact, it's probably the default mode for most photographers. However, there are times when using aperture priority mode, which is usually an A on the dial, or shutter priority, which is the S on the dial, is useful. And there are certain types of shots where these are probably the best way to go. So I'm going to just take a little look at that today and talk a little bit about the aperture priority and shutter priority modes and do a little virtual camera club business. And I think that will keep us busy for the duration of this show. First thing I want to mention is that I want to talk a little bit about the photo assignment. Now, I've just published last month's results for May, and that was Slender, and I have an excellent gallery that's on the digital story, and you can find it either by going to Photo Assignment under the Jump To menu up in the upper right-hand corner, and take a look at that gallery. It's a very good-looking gallery. Again, I think people are doing a great job of embracing the assignment and then, you know, trying to create something that works, you know, for it, maybe doing something that's a little creative. And I'm seeing a lot of good stuff in there. Now, we're already in the middle of this month, and the photo assignment for June is before and after. Well, here's the idea on it. And I've touched on this in the other shows, but I really want to spend a few minutes with it today. When we take shots with our camera, of course, being, you know, virtual camera club members, you know, we're striving to capture the best shot possible. Okay, so we want, you know, good capture at the time we take the picture. But often, you know, and especially for the shots that we really, really end up loving, there's a little post-production involved also. And so what I'd like to do for this assignment is send me your original shot, you know, unmanipulated, not cropped, no exposure, no white balance, no adjustments at all, right? Just your original image sized down to 600 pixels on its longest side. And then send me the manipulated version of it, the version that, you know, that you were proud of, the version that you would use to make the print, the version that you would put in a slideshow to show to others, you know, the version of this shot that is what you considered the finished product. And then, of course, you know, feel free to say a few words about, you know, why you did what you did and the software that you used to do it, you know, and give us a little bit of information. Now, the, you know, caption area on the photo assignments, you know, it's not super long, but you certainly have enough room there to do, you know, 3, 4, 5 sentences about the process and the decision making that you used. So it'll be 2 shots before and after. Make sure that your subject line says photo assignment, you know, June 2007. Attach both shots. Send me a little bit of information with it and make sure I have your name and all that good stuff. Try not to strip out the metadata if you can. If you don't know what that means, and don't worry about it. Just go about your business. And I think this is going to be a fascinating gallery because we're going to have some insight as to people's photography process, you know, what they do when they first capture the image, and then, you know, where they try to take that image after it's on the computer. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Get your shots in by the end of the month. Also, we have all sorts of other things going on. Of course, grab shots continue to impress me, and lots of fun, and I'm trying to run at least one a week. Again, send it in with the subject line, grab shot, and you can then put whatever you want with that. And then also the member photo gallery, which is, you know, driven, fueled by our Flickr public group, the Digital Story public group. And if you haven't been over there yet, we have a discussion forum going on. We have people submitting pictures every day. We have new members coming on every day. And then for those that put the critique tag on their shots, we also have discussions going on about their photos too. And this is really a lot of fun. So I want to just touch on the tagging for a second. Of course, the tags are something that you can add to any photo that you put in Flickr, and you can add them at the time of upload. You can add them after the photo's already in the system. You can add them to photos that have been in the Flickr system forever. And they're pretty clearly marked. It just says tags. You just click on it, and you can add whatever you want. If it's a two-word tag, you just put it in quotes. Otherwise, you just put a word, space, and each of those words becomes a tag. So people that are members of our Digital Story public pool, we ask that you put TDS as one tag on all of your shots that go in the public pool, because that allows us to find them and sort and filter them out from the billion of other shots that are in Flickr right now. And then, of course, if you want a discussion about your image, you know, from someone else in our Virtual Camera Club member, then you add a second word, which is critique. And that's a sign for us to say, hey, you want to have a discussion about your photo. You want to have a little, you know, constructive critique. You want to have a little evaluation that includes, you know, both the things that we find really strong and then something that maybe we would experiment with in terms of playing with the image. And I think this is really a terrific process. Now, if you're in the mood to look at other people's photos that want critiquing, then all you have to do is go to our public group page where all the photos are, and then up in the search bar, you just put critique, and it will list all the photos that have the critique tag. And then you have another little link there, and the one that I usually like to do is where you sort by, you know, the latest photo, because they have sort by relevance and latest photo and something else. And I like to sort by the latest photos because I like to see the latest photos that have come in that are asking for critique. And then I just sort of browse through those photos. And when I find one that I feel moved to have a discussion about, then I'll post a comment about it, do a little critique. And I usually try to do 3 or 4 at a time. And I try to do that once or twice a week as I can. And it's a lot of fun. And I think it's very helpful. Some members have, even after they've received a critique on a photo, have actually gone and revised it and then reposted that and commented about the feedback that they received. And then you get to see, it's like the before and after thing. Then you get to see the photo that they posted after they did the work based on the thoughts that we had, some of which they accepted, and some I'm sure they said, yeah, you've got to be crazy, I'm not doing that. But anyway, the whole thing is just a lot of fun. And even if you don't feel like submitting photos for critique or review, you can still participate by looking at other people's shots and playing around in the discussion forums. And I hope you do, because it's another way to really get to know the other folks that are in our Virtual Camera Club. I want to give a shout out to our sponsors, Boink Software and also ExpoDisc. Both of them have tiles on all the pages on the Digital Story. Both of them are great sponsors, and I hope you go over and visit their sites. Okay, let's talk a little bit about aperture priority and shutter priority right now. So you're on program mode, and the thing that program mode does that's so alluring and why so many of us love it so much is that program mode basically evaluates the scene that you've pointed your camera at, and it figures out the aperture setting and the shutter speed setting for that scene. And most of the time, it's doggone accurate. So program mode is very good in terms of actually getting a shot, in terms of recording the shot with good exposure in the areas that you want. I think the best place to start is talk about what each of these two modes do, shutter priority and aperture priority. I'll start with aperture priority. So unlike program mode that sets both your shutter speed and your aperture, aperture priority allows you to set the aperture yourself, and then the camera handles the corresponding shutter speed. So you get to set it to f2.8, f4, f5.6, f8, f11, and so forth. And then the camera reads the scene and says, oh, you need a shutter speed of, 1/125th, 1/250th, 1/500th, etc. So whenever you make a change to the aperture setting, the camera will make a corresponding change to the shutter speed. Now on shutter priority, it's just the opposite. You set the shutter speed, 1/125th of a second, 1/60th of a second, 1/30th of a second, and the camera will set the aperture. It'll set, f8, f11, f16. You make a change to the shutter speed, it changes the aperture. And so you're controlling the speed and the camera handles everything else. Now, when would you use these instead of just being in program mode and letting the camera handle both? Aperture priority has some very useful applications. And most of them, for me anyway, hover around controlling the depth of field. Now, as you may recall from earlier podcasts, generally speaking, the more you stop down the aperture, in other words, make that diaphragm get smaller down to a little pinhole. So, for instance, a wide open aperture would be something like, f2.8. But as you stop it down, you go to f5.6, you go to f11, you go to f16, the hole gets smaller and smaller with each of those settings. As you do that, the depth of field increases. So more things from front to back in your scene will be in focus as the depth of field increases. So you can use aperture priority to control this. Sometimes you're going to want a lot of depth of field. For instance, when you're shooting landscape, let's say that you want a foreground flower in focus, and you want, the mountains in the background in focus, a lot of depth of field. That's usually when you would stop down that aperture to f16 or f22 to get a lot of depth of field. Now, on the other hand, when you're shooting portraits outdoors, you may want that background to be very soft. You may want it to be just a blur because you want all the attention to go on the subject that you're photographing and not be distracted by what's in the background. So in that case, you would use aperture priority at f2.8 or f4, right? So you have a shallower depth of field, focus right on the subject's eyelashes and take that picture and let that background go soft. And of course, the farther away the background is from your subject, the softer it will get because that depth of field will fall off quickly at a wide open aperture. So those are the two major uses of aperture priority. Now with shutter priority, you have a whole different set of things that you can do. Of course, shutter priority, you set the shutter speed. Camera sets the corresponding aperture for you. Now, I use shutter priority for two main things. One is action photography, and the other is water. Action photography mainly has to do with when you want to stop action, which is what you want to do most of the time. If you're out shooting a softball game or a soccer game or basketball or something, you want to freeze the action. You don't want a whole lot of motion blur going on unless you're trying to do something artistic. But most of the time, you want to freeze that ball in the air. You want to freeze expressions and all that kind of stuff. And that usually requires a faster shutter speed. And what I mean by fast, I mean something around at least 1/250th of a second. Outdoors, a lot of times you can get up to 1/500th, 1/1000th. Even 1/2000th, depending on the lighting conditions and how fast your lens is and so forth. And once you get over 1/500th of a second, you'll be able to freeze most action. Now, sometimes when I'm indoors and I don't have as much light as I would like, and even after I raise the ISO up a little bit and use my fastest lens, I still might have to shoot at 1/125th of a second or 1/250th of a second if I'm lucky. And what you do when you want to freeze action in those situations is you try to record at peak. There's a moment on anything, on a shot, on a baseball pitch, on everything. There's a moment where the action sort of peaks, right when the pitcher releases the ball, or right when the basketball player releases a shot, or right when the tennis player makes contact with the ball. There's sort of a peak that happens there. And if you can capture your shot then, you can actually, a lot of times, freeze action with a little bit slower shutter speed. And there's a bit of a trick. Now, the workaround is, of course, if you shoot in burst mode and you just start shooting right before the peak of the action and then kind of just shoot one or two frames after it, then chances are you will catch it that way. You will have to sift through, you know, 5 or 6 or 8 frames to get the one that you want. But a lot of times that whole sequence can be interesting too. So that's another way to catch action at its peak, is to use a burst mode. But either way, you're probably going to be in shutter priority, where you set it at, let's say, 1/500th of a second. You point your camera at the scene there. You see what the aperture readout is, and if it's within the range of your lens, if it gives you like f4 or whatever, and you have an f2.8 lens, you're in great shape, right? If the aperture warning starts to blink, in other words, it's saying, hey, you know, you don't have a fast enough lens in this light for that shutter speed, then you're going to have to knock your shutter speed down a notch. Let's say if you're at 1/500th, you'll probably have to knock it down to 1/250th of a second, and then hope that that warning goes away. And then once the warning goes away, you know you can shoot at that speed. And the idea is basically to shoot at the fastest speed you can, given the lighting conditions that are present and the lens that you have mounted on the camera. Now, another instance when I like to use shutter priority is when I'm photographing water, because, you know, water can be so many different things. Let's say a waterfall, a little waterfall. You can shoot water at a high shutter speed, let's say 1/500th of a second, and actually freeze the drops of water as they fall through the air and just kind of freeze the whole thing. Or you can shoot it with a really long shutter speed, such as 1 second or 2 seconds, or even a half a second, a really long shutter speed. And then you get that sort of flowy sort of look, that real angelic kind of ethereal sort of water scene. And you can perfectly control this by the shutter speed setting that you put. Now, of course, just like when you're doing high speed photography, when you're doing long exposures, when you want that ethereal look with your water, you know, that's not always easy either, because there might be too much light to allow you to have such a long exposure. So what you do is, you know, you lower your ISO down as far as it'll go, ISO 80 or 50 or 100, whatever the lowest setting is on your camera. Then you set the shutter speed at what you want, you know, what you hope to get, let's say 1 second, and you look through the viewfinder. And if you're getting the, you know, the warning, oh, there's too much light, it's going to be overexposed, then you either have to increase your shutter speed, let's say to a half a second, or what I like to do is put a polarizer over the front of my lens, because that's 2 stops of density. And a lot of times that will help me get down to that long shutter speed that I want. And you know what? I've put 2 polarizers on lenses before in order to get the shutter speed that I want, to drop it down 4 stops. So that's a trick that you can use. Now, if you're shooting with a compact camera or something, you know, you can use your sunglasses. You can hold your sunglasses over the lens and add a little density to the scene to enable those longer shutter speeds. Now, of course, when you're shooting at anything slower than a 15th of a second, you're going to either have to mount it on a tripod or steady it on a rock or do something. And then I would use either the self-timer or the remote release to trip the shutter, because you don't want to jar the camera at the point that you're initiating the exposure. Okay, otherwise, you know, that will add softness to the image in areas you don't want, such as the rocks and the trees and the foliage, stuff like that. So either use the self-timer, and of course, if you got the 2-second setting on your self-timer, that's great, because you don't have to wait 10 seconds to initiate the exposure. 2 seconds, that just gives it long enough for the camera to steady after you hit the shutter button, and then it initiates the exposure 2 seconds later. Or if you have a remote release, that works great too, but not everyone carries one of those. So self-timer ends up a lot of times being the way that you trip the shutter when your camera's mounted on a tripod for those long exposures. So that's when aperture priority and shutter priority come in handy. Those are just a couple instances when you might want to take it off program mode and use these other two modes. Now, there's other stuff too, and I think if you have a time when you switch over from program to one of these two other modes, it'd be really great if you posted a comment on the show notes of this so we can build a little body of knowledge around this so that we can help folks, so that when they're thinking about using one of these two modes, you know, they can go, they can listen to the podcast, they can read the show notes, and then they can see some of the anecdotal information that you're posting, that one of those things might help them. It might be exactly what they want to do, an assignment they want to tackle, and you might have the answer for them right there. So don't be afraid to contribute. We really like having as much information with these podcasts as we can get. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for this week. Lots of great stuff going on. Don't forget about the before and after assignment. I think you're really going to enjoy the exercise if you have time to participate. Go out there and practice with shutter priority and aperture priority. Get those two modes under your belt so that when you need them, you can comfortably move it off P and feel confident that you're going to get the shot that you want. Don't forget about grab shots, and most importantly, don't forget to take pictures. All right, go take some shots, and then I will see you back here next week. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.